The indictment charges 13 Russian nationals and three Russian companies for committing federal crimes while seeking to interfere in the United States political system, including the 2016 presidential election. The defendants allegedly conducted what they called information warfare against the United States, with the stated goal of spreading distrust towards the candidates and the political system in general. According to the allegations in the indictment, 12 of the individual defendants worked at various times for a company called Internet Research Agency, LLC, a Russian company based in St. Petersburg. The other individual defendant, Yevgeny Viktorovich Prigozhin, funded the conspiracy through companies known as Concord Management and Consulting, LLC, Concord Catering, and many affiliates and subsidiaries.
Ladies and gentlemen, meet Rod Rosenstein, the FBI acting director. He's the guy overseeing the Russia investigation. He's watching what Robert Mueller is doing right now. Robert Mueller. I always read the name, so I forget how to read it. But Rod Rosenstein, his name is said Rod Rosenstein. I point this out for a very important reason. On right-wing radio, I listen to right-wing radio all day and I watch Fox News, and they keep saying Rosenstein. Every single one of them pronounces it Rosenstein. And there's a very good reason for that. Anti-Semitism is rampant in the Republican Party right now. And there's no way that they think it's pronounced Rod Rosenstein when it's clearly pronounced Rod Rosenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 242. I'm going to share more right-wing talking points with you today. I'm going to let you know what they're saying over on that side. I'm going to let you know what's what with the Russia investigation. I'm going to talk about stolen elections. Oh, man, I'm excited. Yo, let's throw down, kids.
If it's their intention to interfere, they're going to find ways to do that. And we can take steps we can take. But this is something that once they decide they're going to do it, it's very difficult to preempt it.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. Rex Tillerson, the only thing that he was really known for before becoming Secretary of State was his tight, tight relationship with Vladimir Putin. He even got the Medal of Friendship, the Award of Friendship. I forget what the Russians call it, but it's the highest non-Russian honor that can be bestowed upon someone. And that is because he used to be the head of Exxon. And as the head of Exxon, he had a very close relationship with Russia. Russia has its own state-owned oil company. And Donald Trump, and I've mentioned this on the show before, Donald Trump had never even heard of Rex Tillerson until he got the nomination for president. And then all of a sudden, here's Rex Tillerson, this guy who's tight with Putin, but he swears, yo, this has got absolutely nothing to do with Russia. Russia, who?
I think it's important we just continue to say to Russia, look, if you think we don't see what you're doing, we do see it, and you need to stop. If you don't, you're going to just continue to invite consequences for yourself.
Is the U.S. better prepared this time around than 2016?
Well, I don't know that I would say we're better prepared, because the Russians will adapt as well. If it's their intention to interfere, they're going to find ways to do that. And we can take steps we can take. But this is something that once they decide they're going to do it, it's very difficult to preempt it.
He says, hey, Russia, we see what you're doing and you're going to invite consequences. There were sanctions passed by Congress right away after Donald Trump became president. And it didn't pass by a small margin. Most Republicans and Democrats, it was like 98 to 2. Right? There's like two people that said no. 98, that's a Senate vote, 98-2. They hand it off to the president. The president signs it. And then, and this is what the executive branch does, they enforce the laws. And since that has been signed, Trump has decided to not push those sanctions on Russia. As a matter of fact, he had a meeting with the Russians in the Oval Office where no American press was allowed shortly after he became president. And he told them, you don't have to worry about the sanctions anymore. This is one of the things with Flynn also. Now that Flynn has said that he's going to, you know, or he's pleaded guilty and said he's going to cooperate with the Mueller investigation, One of the first things that Flynn got pegged for was the fact that he took a call from the Russians and didn't tell the FBI he was talking to him, took a call with the Russians and said, hey, don't worry about the sanctions. When we get into office, we're going to do what you want. So now a member of the administration, Rex Tillerson, has said, hey, yeah, they're messing with the election, but you know what? We can't do anything about it. Well, you could, and I'm just spitballing here, you could enforce the sanctions. Just a thought, which has not been done yet. And of course, General McMaster came out recently after these indictments came out and said, yeah, Russia clearly messed with the elections. But when the White House is asked about it, the White House says, well, the sanctions, we don't need to because we're already being tough on Russia. And when he says we're already being tough on Russia, that what that really means is, look, dude, hey, we're already giving them everything that they want.
Our political system was an even bigger bargain to these people. The Republicans run a play called Red Map. It's short for the Redistricting the Majority Project. It only costs $30 million. This is chump change in American politics. It's chump change for the big corporations, for the oil companies and the insurers and the business. It is a lot of money on that side. But on this side, it was nothing. And they essentially were able to purchase the entire system for a song. You can't lose a U.S. Senate race these days for less than $100 million. For $30 million, Republicans were able to turn state legislatures red across the country, even in swing states, even in blue states like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Ohio and Wisconsin and North Carolina. And they were able to make it possible so that even in years when Democrats get more votes, Republicans not only have more seats, but they often have veto-proof supermajorities in all of these states. So they have the ability to enact their agenda in state after state, even when they get fewer votes. And we see what that agenda is. The first thing they do is go after voting rights. The second thing they do is go after labor rights.
That's David Daley. He wrote a book about the 2010 redistricting project, Red Map, and the book is called Rat Effed. You can guess what effed is. We don't swear on this show. And he's talking about how the Republicans gamed the system so that if they win by a little bit, they get it. If they lose by a little bit, they get it. If they win overwhelmingly, they get it. The only way Democrats can win is with a gigantic, overwhelming win. We just saw this in Virginia recently where Democrats statewide got 200,000 more votes than did the Republicans. But there was one race that was tied, and it came down to a single vote. And that single vote tipped in the direction of the Democrats. It was for a Democrat. So you could say in that one county, the Democrats won by one vote. But instead, what happened is the Republicans said, no, we're not going to accept that, and we will sue. So they had to have a coin flip. The Republican won the coin flip and then said, now we'll accept the results of the election. Never mind the fact that statewide, Democrats got 200,000 more votes. In that one county, which was really close, where the Democrat won by a vote, the Republicans still got to take it home. So there's an article in Rolling Stone, which in the last decade or so has become absolutely known for their political articles. They don't do as much music anymore, but they're absolutely golden on politics. So there's an article titled How the GOP Rigs Elections. With a combination of gerrymandering, voter ID laws, and dark money, Republicans have tipped political scales in their favor. So it's talking about, will the Democrats be able to win with this overwhelming margin like they believe that they're going to get in the 2018 elections? So the article is by Ari Berman, quoting here. On a quiet tree-lined street in Racine, Wisconsin, in a neighborhood known as the Danish Village for its Scandinavian ancestry, sits a two-story white house with a large American flag hanging from the porch and a pro-police We Back the Badge sign in the yard. It's the home of Republican Senator Van Wainguard, a 65-year-old former cop whose blonde hair resembles that of Dennis the Menace. Two houses to the south, Wingard's state Senate district, the 21st, abruptly cuts off. Just like that. Just two houses down, it abruptly cuts off to exclude the rest of the largely Democratic neighborhood. This used to be one of the state's most competitive Senate districts, encompassing all of a rectangular-shaped Racine County, a 50-50 mix of urban and rural counties in southeast Wisconsin. But since the GOP gained control of the state's government in 2010 and redrew the legislative maps, the district is now shaped like a horseshoe, pulling in the Republican countryside of Racine and Kenosha counties while excluding heavily Democratic areas except for the block where Wingard lives. It's a primary example of how a party in power chose a district for their guy, says John Lehman, a Democrat who represented the 21st before Wingard got it. The gerrymandering in Wisconsin, which experts call among the most extreme in U.S. history, is but one part of the Republican stealth plan to stay in office. Since Governor Walker and the Republican legislature took power, they've also introduced some of the country's harshest voting restrictions, passing laws that make it harder for Democratic-leaning constituencies to register to vote and cast ballots. At the same time, the state has become the wild, wild west of dark money. This according to Lisa Graves, a senior fellow at the Madison Bay Center for Media and Democracy, with Republican politicians like Walker raising unprecedented sums from billionaires to finance their campaigns. All three of these things have been part of a whole, says Eric Holder, Barack Obama's attorney general, who founded the National Democratic Redistricting Committee in 2016 to challenge Republican gerrymandering efforts. We could end up with a system where a well-financed minority that has views inconsistent with the vast majority of the people run this country. Walker has, of course, urged other states to follow his model. Reactionary politics is a big Wisconsin export now. In the summer of 2011, this is how I learned about Walker. He had a bill stripping employee public unions of their collective bargaining rights. So Wisconsin had a surplus, a budget surplus. Then he became governor and he slashed taxes on all the millionaires and billionaires. And just like the Republicans are doing now with their tax cut plan, he went, oh my God, where's all the money? Who took all the money? You know what? Unions, specifically collective bargaining unions, public unions need to lose their rights because dang gummit, they're costing us too much money. Quoting here, Walker's bill stripping public employee unions of collective bargaining rights, Republican members of the legislature visited the offices of Michael Best and Frederick, the party's go-to law firm. The GOP was in control of the state's redistricting process for the first time since the 1950s, and Republicans were shown to the map room, where their aides were drawing new political districts in secret following the 2010 census. This is what David Daley was just talking about a minute ago. They spent all of $30 million and they now control the House and the Senate, even though they don't have a majority of the votes and their views are completely anti the American people. Quoting again, the legislators signed confidentiality agreements, pledging not to discuss the work with anyone, even though the redistricting was financed with taxpayer funds. Public comments on this map may be different than what you hear in this room, read the talking points distributed to the GOP legislators. You have to ignore the public comments, though. On July 11, 2011, the maps were introduced into the legislature. No Democrat had seen them before they were released. There was one public hearing 2 days later, and the reshaped districts were approved the next week on a party line vote. Wingard saw the new maps that were tilted heavily in him and his party's favor and said, yep, this seems to me like a perfectly fair map. In 2012, Obama carried Wisconsin by 7 points, and Democratic legislative candidates received 51.4% of the statewide vote, but Republicans won 60 of 99 seats in the state house. Under the Republican map, the number of safe GOP seats in the 132-member legislature increased from 55 to 69, and the number of swing districts decreased from 24 to 13. It's a foolproof system. No matter what happens nationally, Republicans would maintain control of state politics. This was taken to court. Democrats in Wisconsin went to court to contest the efforts in November of 2016. A federal court panel surprisingly struck down Wisconsin state's legislative maps as unconstitutional political gerrymandering that was intended to burden the representational rights of Democratic voters by impeding their ability to translate their votes into legislative seats. Republicans appealed it in state court, and this year it sits in front of the Supreme Court. It's Gill v. Whitford, and we'll be talking about it here on this program. If they win Gill v. Whitford in the Supreme Court, then what that, and it's a very good chance that they could, because remember, Trump put a hard right winger on the Supreme Court, that seat that they held from Obama. He put a hard right winger on the Supreme Court, somebody who's really just like Scalia. So it's very likely that this is going to be decided in the Republicans' favor. But Eric Holder also has that Democratic redistricting going on. But Eric Holder isn't trying to redraw the lines so that what you end up with are these safe Democratic districts. What he's trying to do with his redistricting project is more like octagons, right? Make the districts more like octagons, closer to squares, something that makes a little bit more sense. Rather than, because if you look at them now, and gerrymander, so obviously the Jerry comes from the guy who initially came up with redistricting back during the 1800s, and then the Mander is from Salamander. Because if you look at them, some of them really just snake through people's backyards, and it's clearly drawn to benefit a specific candidate and a specific party. And it's not just redrawing the districts. These voter ID laws, voter fraud, in-person voter fraud is not a problem. Let me say that again. In-person voter fraud is not a problem. But if it were a problem, there is already a fine and I think 5 years prison time attached to it. If you get busted for in-person voter fraud, this is hilarious because during the 2016 election, on right-wing news and right-wing radio and Vox News and all the rest, and I listen to these damn things, they were telling everybody, stealing the election, stealing the election. The Democrats are voting. They're bringing in hundreds of Mexicans, and they're all voting 100 times, right? You can't do that, but fine. Conservatives, the conservative voters, the ones who voted for Trump, they're really not known for their brains. So there was one woman in particular, I remember, that decided to try to go. So she voted in one place for Trump. And she tried to vote in another place for Trump, and they busted her. Just like that. She gets arrested, and they go, what the hell were you doing? She says, I'm just trying to counter all of those Mexicans that are voting 100 times for Hillary Clinton. And they go, okay, it's not happening now, and of course you're going to prison, dumb, because you did something dumb. So the Republicans said, in order to vote, what you need is this real ID, this state-issued ID. And it's got to be a driver's license. You know, they got all these. What they do is they have these groups, right? The same kind of group they spent $30 million on to do the redistricting, the red map. They have these groups, and they get together, and they say, okay, in order to shut out Democratic voters, what kind of ID should they have? And in most states, it's a driver's license because they know that older people who want to protect Social Security aren't likely to have a driver's license because they're old, their eyes are bad, they can't drive anymore. Maybe their motor skills aren't the best. And then they said, also, we don't want them to be able to vote with a college ID because college turns people into liberals. And then they noticed that a lot of African Americans do not have a driver's license. And they go, boom, right there. That constituency votes 98% Democratic. So that constituency can't have driver's license, or a lot of them don't have driver's licenses. So if we want to reduce the number of people that can vote for Democrats, require that everybody bring a driver's license to the poll. They're also engaged in another thing called voter caging. We used to have a law against voter caging, and it lapsed. And it lapsed because the Republicans let it lapse. And what that is they would get the voter rolls, and then they would mail a postcard to the house. of the registered voter. And they would say, you have to return this to us within X amount of time, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it is. And if we don't get it back, then we're stripping your name off the rolls. And what happened with a lot of folks is maybe the addresses were wrong, they've moved, or maybe, this was a big one, people would be fighting overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan and wouldn't get the cards, and they'd strip these people off the rolls. And now with those folks, they might not find out this election, but of course they're going to find out next election when they're home. And they wiped all those people off the rolls. And when they showed up to the polls, they gave them something called a provisional ballot, which is akin to a placebo. And they go, here, here's your ballot. And they vote, they turn it in, and provisional ballots go into a box. And the only time they might be counted, the only time they might be counted is if it's a contested election. But the Republicans have set up the elections through Red Map to make sure that the Republicans win almost every single time. Most people aren't aware of Red Map. Most people aren't aware about the true reason why the Republican Party wants to have voter ID laws. They know that they are absolutely hands down, upside down and inside out, out of step with the American people. And I've always said, if you have to lie in order to make your case, is your case worth winning? If you have to cheat in order to win, do you really want the win? And what most folks in the Republican Party have said is yes. Yeah, we do.
So, Clint, let me ask you this. I got into a discussion over dinner last night with someone who said to me, you can't tell me any votes were changed. And I think what they meant, the implication was at a ballot box in the 2016 election. It may not be resonating with anyone that votes changed at the ballot box, in your opinion, are not the focus of this discussion. It's the votes or influence that may have been changed by these meddlers in our news and social media.
That's right. There was no hacking of actually voting machines and changing votes. But at the same point, we saw massive movement and massive changes that were missed by polling, I would add, that are hard to explain. And when you put it in the context of the social media influence campaign, they sought to push down Clinton, push up Trump, tell Bernie Sanders supporters that he got a raw deal from the DNC, and even help Jill Stein voters show up to the polls. In states where there's lots of gerrymandering and in states where we only have swing states, let's say six or seven of them around the country, this can have an outsized impact in terms of changing the vote, especially when we're talking about 1% or less decided some of these elections. So they can nudge in just a very, very small way. What's most important for the public to know in all of this is it's about eroding trust in our democratic right. institutions. And that is the most damaging part of this. The second set of narratives pushed by the Kremlin was election rigged voter fraud. That is to make people believe that their votes didn't count, that they're really not having a voice, which creates widespread apathy.
So that's Clinton Watts, a member of the intelligence community. And he's done all kinds of things in front of Congress recently. And I keep hearing this argument. Now that we know for certain, and it's undeniable, now that we know that the Russians interfered in the 2016 election, including on Facebook. And let me say this before I go too much further. If you, ladies and gentlemen, if you are on Facebook and that is where you get your news, you are being lied to. And I don't care if you're a progressive. It's not a good place to get news. I had an account for a while there, and I didn't have any friends, and I only used it to follow news sites. But even with that, these false stories from not real news organizations would still make their way into my feed. Because I go, okay, if I want to know what my friends are doing, I'll ask them what they're doing. If I want to see pictures of their kids, dang gummit, I'll just go over there. I'll say, send me pictures of your kids. I don't need Facebook for that kind of stuff. So I get this other profile, and I try to only watch news sites. And even in my feed, where I'm only picking reputable sites, I'm still ending up with these false news stories. And I said, okay, that's it. So now I go to each individual website for all of these news sites, and I read from their websites. And where necessary, I give them money, like to The Nation or to The Guardian. You know, I pay for these. And then for the other ones, of course, I sit through their ads to get the news. But if you're getting your news from Facebook, and I don't care how savvy you might think you are, you're being tilted. Think about that. They helped get Jill Stein voters out to the polls because they know that the Stein voters aren't going to vote for Hillary. They're going to vote for Stein, which that could potentially be a Hillary vote. And then, of course, and Democrats did this in the 2016 election, and I saw it during the Democratic convention. I saw them on TV, and I know because a bunch of people from my area, from the Vancouver, Washington area, a whole bunch of them, and I see one of them all the time. She's a server at a restaurant that I go to. They got themselves on TV wearing the hashtag DNC leaks on their shirt. That was a Russia thing. And that was to sow more discord. And that was to get people who backed Bernie to not back Hillary. So even with stuff like that, it all helps the Russians. And now we know they played a role in the 2016 election. And they're already playing an outsized role in the 2018 election. This school shooting that we just had, I'm going to talk about this a little bit more next week. I'm still collecting news on that one. But the school shooting that we had, of course, there's a vigorous discussion going on Facebook and on Twitter and on Instagram and all these. And Russian bots are all over the place. And we know because we're tracking the bots now. Russian bots are all over the place pushing these pro-NRA talking points to make it seem like nobody wants us to do anything about this because we're totally cool with our children being slaughtered in their classrooms.
Three of the nation's top intelligence officials tell a Senate committee there has been increased Russian activity aimed at meddling in the upcoming midterm elections. Sagar Magani with more.
CIA Director Mike Pompeo is among those telling the Senate Intelligence Committee Moscow seems set on interfering again.
We have seen Russian activity and intentions.
National Intelligence Chief Dan Coats agreed, noting the Russians are using social media and other means.
Clearly in 2016, they upped their game.
National Security Agency Director Mike Rogers also says Russia aims to meddle. Independent Senator Angus King says the intelligence community is in agreement.
If only the president would say that.
And says intelligence officials cannot fully tackle the problem unless the president's on board. Sagar Magani at the White House.
And the president is not on board. I want to go through some of the clips that I pulled from, and I listened to that entire hearing where these three gentlemen from the intelligence community were sitting in front of Congress talking about the past Russian meddling and, of course, the upcoming Russian meddling.
Frankly, the United States is under attack. Under attack by entities that are using cyber to penetrate virtually every major action that takes place in the United States. There should be no doubt that Russia perceived that its past efforts as successful and views the 2018 U.S. midterm elections as a potential target for Russian influence operations.
So the 2018 elections are about continuing to help Trump, to make sure that he keeps the Congress that he wants, that he gets to hold on to the Republicans. And this is why, even in something that's not about the upcoming election, you see Russian bots out there forcing an argument between the two sides in this country.
Have you seen Russian activity in the lead up to the 2018 election cycle?
Yes, we have seen Russian activity and intentions to have an impact on the next election cycle here.
Director Coates?
Yes, we have.
Anyone else? Admiral Rogers.
Yes, and I think this would be a good topic to get into greater detail in this afternoon.
And when he talked about this afternoon, because what I have clips from is the public session, the open door session. After this was over, they went into a closed door session with Congress and continued to talk about some of the more sensitive things that they don't want the Russians to hear about. So this hearing was to let the people know, yeah, the Russians meddled in the 2016 election. No two ways about that. That's why we've got the 13 indictments. And a word about the 13 indictments. Those folks are in Russia now. They were in America during the 2016 election. And they're back in Russia now. And when the Kremlin heard about those indictments, They threw their heads back. They laughed and they said, "Oh, you silly Americans. You've got one of ours as your president. Nothing will be happening with respect to extraditing these folks or the upcoming elections." Ladies and gentlemen, we have a Russian puppet for president. So those 13 guys, they're not likely ever going to face any real charges because they would have to travel to America. And they're on notice now that if they travel to America, they're going to be arrested as soon as they arrive. Their name shows up on an airline itinerary. That's it. They're going to be arrested at the airport. So they're not going to come here. But I think Mueller put this out as a way of saying, yeah, this is a major piece of this. This is a monster piece of this. And the Russians played a role in the election. And they went to – I didn't play all of Rosenstein's statement because it was fairly long. But Rosenstein went to extraordinary lengths during his press conference, during his announcement of the indictments, to say that this isn't about the White House and this isn't about Russia. Well, that's great. And of course it's not. See, all of the indictments that have come out have been a complete surprise to us. Papadopoulos. Who's Papadopoulos? No one knows. There's been quite a few names come out none of us knew about. People that played a major role in the 2016 election, but they've now been indicted. And then, of course, several members of his administration, Trump's administration, or former members of his administration, have been indicted. But the FBI went out of their way to say, "Don't worry, this isn't about you. This is about these guys. Bad actors." But the thing about Mueller is he plays it close to the vest. And I think the big one is coming.
We do need a U.S. government strategy and clear authorities to go achieve that strategy.
Our job is to get that right information to the policymakers and get on with it because it's just common sense. If someone is attacking you and there's no retribution or response, it's just going to incentivize more contacts.
All right.
Right now, there are a lot of blank checks. There's a lot of things that we need to do.
And all of these men have talked with the president over the phone, in person. They've all talked to him. They've all made him aware of it. Gentlemen, has the president said to any of you, has he given you any directive about what to do with America being under attack from Russia?
Has the president directed you and your agency to take specific actions to confront and blunt Russian influence activities that are ongoing?
We're taking a lot of specific efforts to blunt Russian
efforts. Directed by the president?
Not as specifically directed by the president.
He has asked our agency to cooperate with each of the investigations that's ongoing and do everything we can to ensure that we thoroughly understand this potential threat.
The agency has full understanding that we are to provide whatever intelligence is relevant and make sure that that is passed on to our policymakers, including the president.
The lie that is being told right now is that all of this Russia stuff, all of this is about some made-up dossier. So the Democrats paid for it, and they got a fake FISA warrant out of it, and it never should have happened. And it's this long, convoluted lie. So I heard Charlie Savage encapsulate this entire right-wing talking point. And if you tune into Hannity or Levin or Limbaugh, you'll hear it day after day. They've all got this talking point, this really short, like, you'll hear Charlie Sykes just narrow it down to about a minute and a half. Like the entire, and then you'll hear on three-hour talk shows, this is all they talk about, just drilling it into conservatives' heads so that when the indictment does come down, they get to go, "Hey, remember what we told you about this? None of this is real. All of this is fake news. Stop paying attention to this."
The chain of logic here is as follows. First, you conflate the entire Russia investigation with just the information gathered by Chris Steele. So you ignore the hacking of the Democratic emails, the use of social media accounts by Russian trolls to drive up dissension in the system and so forth, and you say all the Russia investigation is, the fountainhead of it, the beginning and the end of it, is this dossier of unverified allegations by Chris Steele, who was hired by Democrats. And And you also say he probably made that up because this was about smearing someone in, who was running against Hillary Clinton. This wasn't about him actually talking to real sources who were telling him real things. So this is just about the Steele dossier. Then you say the investigators got a warrant as part of that investigation by going to a judge and using Mr. Steele's information without explaining to the judge adequately that this was Democratic paid for opposition research. This is a, and you ignore all the other information that was in that application, stuff that the FBI cannot talk about to defend itself because that would blow every other source the country has for figuring out what Russia's up to, surveillance, human sources, and so forth. No, it's just Steele. That's all that this thing was, and you make that scandalous. And then the third step is the memo says Rod Rosenstein used this too because he signed off on resubmitting it to the court for an extension. That means he's now vulnerable to attack as also complicit in this Watergate-level offense. Rod Rosenstein stands between Trump and Mueller. He's the only person who can fire Mueller. He has said he would refuse an illegal order to fire Mueller because the only way to make it legal is if he finds that Mueller has committed misconduct and he has not seen any evidence of that. If Rod Rosenstein is fired because he used this Steele information and that was indeed scandalous or can be said to be scandalous, Trump can put someone else in that role who would be more accommodating and would be willing to say, I see that there's a reason to fire Mueller and shut down this investigation.
Right.
So there's MI5, five, and MI6, six. So MI5 is the British FBI, and MI6 is the British CIA. And of course, the easy way to remember that, these are all British agencies, is MI5, that's the British FBI, and MI6 is the CIA. So Steele used to work for MI5, and he used to be the main man on Russia. And anybody that's ever come in contact with this gentleman will tell you that he's absolutely on it. You know, you can trust this guy. He does his work. He knows Russia inside and out. And so the fact that the Republican Party, the United States Republican Party in Congress, and in the right-wing media, have taken to just trying to destroy this guy. And for what? For Trump? This guy with this impeccable reputation, this guy who called the FBI when he learned that the Russians were interfering in our election and talking directly with the Trump campaign, colluding. There was collusion. When he found out about it, he's not American. He's British. But he called our FBI and said, this is what's going on. And then the Republicans in Congress suggested that he should be brought up on charges for that. Not the Russians. Not anyone in the Trump administration. The guy that ratted him out for breaking the law. That guy needs to go to prison.
What I find fascinating about this reporting is it emphasizes that while Steele is now being portrayed in some quarters as like a political gun for hire, he was the opposite of that. He was a trusted intelligence partner. That's how the FBI saw him. He had helped them in their investigation of corruption in international soccer, and he was coming to them of his own volition. Remember, Glenn Simpson, who hired him, testified that he didn't think that he should go to the FBI with this stuff. Steele said, look, I got to do it. I have an obligation to warn the Americans that this presidential candidate is potentially compromised. And some of the sources he had in Russia were not aware that they were giving him information that was going into a political campaign or going to the FBI. They were sources that he had developed over many years of being a Russia expert.
And then Nunes, the representative from California, he decided to write a memo, which he had Republicans just wetting their pants about. He went ahead and he wrote this memo to protect Trump and the Russians. Think about that. The United States Republican Party, the party of Trump, which is embarrassing on its face, that party now works almost exclusively for Russia now.
who was a number one guy on Russia in the UK. So we're talking about a pretty reliable person. I mean, what is ironic here is that the only person that benefits from this entire episode is Vladimir Putin.
Right.
This is the second time that this president has released classified information to the Russians. He did it with the Russian ambassador in front of everybody in the Oval Office. He did it here without even reading it. He was ready to release it the minute he knew this thing existed without knowing what it said. All of this, in a sense, really corroborates what Christopher Steele was saying in the first place, that Donald Trump is subject to blackmail by the Russian government.
The classified information, and that's what was in this. There was classified information in this, and Trump spent a whole bunch of his time on the 2016 campaign trail complaining about somebody, I can't remember who, somebody who was just constantly sharing classified material when they shouldn't have been sharing classified material, and even suggested that this particular person needs to go to prison for the fact that they shared classified material. Who in the bloody hell was he talking about?
Some bad things came out today, you know, those classified. You know the word classified.
She sent vast amounts of classified information, including information classified as top secret. Top secret. Okay? And this is where they said that she was extremely careless and, frankly, I say, grossly incompetent. She will be such a lousy president, folks.
We can't have someone in the Oval Office who doesn't understand the meaning of the word confidential or classified.
And maybe classified at the highest, highest level. How sad.
There he is making the point. If you don't know the meaning of, okay, and he's right, if you don't know the meaning of classified, she'll make a lousy president. That, of course, was projecting. That was him telling us that he's going to share classified information.
White House has made it abundantly clear that they want the memo published, even though they haven't read it. That should tell you all you need to know about the president's priorities. Even without reading it, even without hearing from the intelligence agencies or the FBI what damage it might do in terms of public release, it's clear they already want it released. That is apparently the standard now for the release of classified information. If it's good for the president, then fine, regardless of its impacts on the Bureau, on the Department, or on the interests of justice.
And it's not just about this memo. You may have heard by now that there are a whole lot of people inside the Trump administration that do not have security clearances yet. The FBI does these background checks. And in order to work with the president and see and hear classified material, you have to have a security clearance. And there's a whole lot of people that see classified daily briefings. One of them being Jared, his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. But he's not the only one that doesn't have a security clearance that this president is sharing classified material with. Now, by the time this show comes out, the White House is supposed to make an announcement about what they're going to do with those people. Is Jared going to be kicked out of his position? Is he not going to get to see the confidential White House daily briefings, even though he can't get a full security clearance? Remains to be seen. By the time this show comes out, that news will be out. I'm sorry, I had to record before the White House made their announcement about what they're going to do. But just the fact that we're even here with this guy that complained about all the classified this and that, and he's got all these people working for him that can't get security clearances, and he's sharing all with all of them classified material.
Nearly 1 year into the Trump administration, and NBC News has learned 30 to 40 White House personnel lack permanent security clearances. One of those folks was Rob Porter. Another, according to the Washington Post, is Jared Kushner. Porter is gone, but Kushner still has access to classified intelligence, including the presidential daily briefing.
I want to take you through, just real quick, because I absorb this conservative information all day, just a little bit of what it's like to be conservative, listening to conservative talk radio. So I hear on this show, I go, man, what a dumb dummy, and the voters, dumb dummies. I probably shouldn't do that, but I can't help it. I'm sorry. You folks don't know which way is up. I know there's some reasonable ones amongst you, But if you're listening to Rush Limbaugh and you're listening to Hannity and you believe them, you don't know which end is up. So one of the ways that Rush defends Trump is through what he calls, and I'm not kidding about this, I got a little proof here, redefining smart. Now, let me just say, we don't have to redefine smart. Smart's already got a good definition. If you peep the dictionary, it's a pretty good definition. And if the vast majority of people agree that somebody is smart, well, that's just, it is what it is. And that's kind of how smart goes. It's the knowledge you have, not how dumb you are or how limited your language is. But Rush is on this campaign right now where he's trying to redefine smart because he knows how many people think that Donald Trump is dumb. And he says it just about every day. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to redefine smart.
Ladies and gentlemen, we need to redefine smart in this country because there are a lot of stupid people who do a lot of dangerous and dumb things, and they are considered the smartest people in the world. Example number one is Hillary Clinton. Example number two is Barack Hussein Obama. Let me give you a side-by-side A-B comparison to give you an idea of what I mean. One president breaks laws to get billions of dollars flown illegally, pallets of cash, into the hands of the people who run the largest state sponsor of terrorism in the world, Iran, and they export it, and this president does everything he can to get them hundreds of millions of dollars in cash. This same country to whom we gave this cash is committed to creating a nuclear arsenal delivered by ICBMs, all of which are known to be under development because this president enabled them to move forward on their research. The other president is working to stop all of this. The other president is working to unwind this insane deal and do what he can to prevent this state sponsor of terrorism from getting nuclear weapons. Now, who's a smart one and who's a dumb one?
So if what he's saying is true, there's no need to redefine smart. Obviously, the first one doesn't sound smart. Second one does sound smart. But of course, the first one, he's trying to say that's what Obama did. And the second one, he's trying to say is what Trump did. When you could really flip those, and that whole pallet of cash thing, that's what George W. Bush did. He's conflating here. It's so weird. That's what George W. Bush did with respect to Iraq. The billions of dollars in cash that was dropped, wrapped to a pallet, $18 billion that just disappeared. But he goes, no. Clearly that was Obama. You wonder how the justification happens with respect to Trump voters. And not all Trump voters, or not all conservatives, are Trump voters. But all Trump voters are absolutely insane. And I don't care if you cast your ballot for him just the one time, because my God, you really thought he was going to do something good for you. Well, I think it's pretty clear what he's going to do for you, and it's absolutely nothing. He's done not a single thing for the working man since he got in there. And it gets worse. A neo-Nazi is about to win a Republican congressional primary in Illinois. Congratulations, quoting here from Jezebel, congratulations once again to the Republicans for being the political party of the choice for white supremacist neo-Nazis and Holocaust deniers. Next month, the Republicans are likely to send a man who calls the Holocaust an international extortion racket to the election for Illinois' 3rd congressional district seat. This is a primary. The Chicago Sun-Times reports that white supremacist Arthur Jones, a former leader of the American Nazi Party, has unsuccessfully run for elected offices in Chicago and Milwaukee since the 70s, including 7 failed bids for the 3rd congressional district primary. He has, up until now, not once come close to winning the seat, but in this year's primary election, he is running unopposed. Nazis, openly running in America. Another one of these, I want to meet you to Nealon. So Paul Nealon is a Republican candidate for Congress who's running for the 1st Congressional District of Wisconsin. That's where we started the show today, ladies and gentlemen. Also known as the seat currently held by House Speaker Paul Ryan. Over the past few months, he's gone full fascist, continuing according support from the alt-right both in Twitter DMs and in public. Because of this, he's been engaged in an ongoing public battle with conservative Republicans like New York Post columnist John Porteritz. In December, Nealon told Porteritz to eat a bullet. It's a Jewish guy. Later that same month, he was deemed too racist even for Breitbart, which said it has cut all ties with him. too racist for Breitbart, removed his contributor page from the website after a series of anti-Semitic and pro-white supremacist comments on the day of the State of the Union. Nealon tweeted this: I've compiled a list of verified Twitter users who have attacked me in the last month alone for my America First positions. America First. Of those 81 people, 71 are Jews, while only seven are non-Jews. Here is the list. And then he shares the list of the Jews that have decided to slight him. GOP congressional candidate makes list of Jews. There's an article in this month's Atlantic magazine called Boycott the GOP, and it's written by Jonathan Rauch and Benjamin Witz. These two writers, they're both conservative writers. One of them is more libertarian, but they're both Republicans. They're both conservative Republicans. And they point out, it is time to boycott the GOP. These are Republicans. But they say the way he has attacked the law enforcement, the way he has attacked the judiciary, the way that he has allowed the Russians to attack our free and fair elections, the way that he has suggested that we jail and murder members of the media, how members of the media right now, there's a case out at just about every single newsroom right now that is not Fox News and that is not the Rush Limbaugh show. Every single newsroom right now has police working on cases, you know, CNN, MSNBC, because these people that work for these news organizations are now getting death threats from people who are saying you're fake news and you all need to die. And I've covered this on the show before, and they said the Republican Party, the article points out, the Republican Party is now the party of Trump. And in order for us to save the party, and I've always argued, although myself, I am not a conservative, I think that we need a good opposing party. I don't think that we need permanent control by Democrats. I don't think we need the Congress to be 100% Democrat. I don't think that the Democrats should win every single election, because not every single person is a progressive. Not every single person is a Democrat. And there are some conservative positions that I like. I would never, and I don't care for what parties, never argue for single party rule. And I think Jonathan Rauch and Benjamin Witz are right. Now, I can't quote too much from the article because it's super long, but if you have a chance, it's called Boycott the GOP. It's in this month's Atlantic, and it's definitely worth the read. So, what can we do? We are in the final minutes of the show. I've done all this bitching and moaning. What can we do, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, and on a side note about the whole anti-Semitic thing, Poland just passed a law denying their role in the Holocaust. There's an article over at The Guardian about that one if you want to get into that. But yeah, this far-right anti-Semitism, racism, alt-right, it's white supremacy. It's worldwide right now. It's not just an American problem. So I talked about Representative Pocan, Mark Pocan of Wisconsin. A lot of Wisconsin in today's show. And he has drawn up a bill called H.R. 1562. And what it does is it fights for free and fair elections. And it's an amendment to the HAVA Act, the Help America Vote Act of 2002. And so the designation of this bill, quoting from the bill, it's about a 14-page bill. I read the whole thing, but I'm just going to give you some highlights. The Secretary of Homeland Security, acting through the Assistant Secretary of the National Protection and Programs Directorate, shall designate the infrastructure used to administer elections for public office, including storage facilities, polling places, vote tabulation locations, voter databases, including online voter registration databases, voting machines, and other systems that manage the election process and critical infrastructure. One of the things that HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, which is a Republican bill, one of the things that HAVA did was it privatized our vote. We brought in private machines from D. Bold and some others. So now the beating heart of democracy is now in the hands of these private industries that want Republicans to win every time. And he says, no, we're not going to have that anymore. And if we're still going to have voting machines, what we're going to do is we're going to have cybersecurity standards and an establishment of standards by the Secretary of Homeland Security and NIST. Notification, of course, of security breaches. Right now, you can hack into these voting machines. It's written in very plain language, and you can flip an election in a moment. And elections have been flipped since 2002 by people just breaking into the machines. States will be required to comply. A lot of states are, no, give us our own states' rights, right? Let us do whatever we want. Of course, the machines will not just be simple tabulations anymore. There will be a paper record. It says that there must be a paper record. So the machines have to be transparent. They have to provide a paper record, both to you and to the folks running the election. There's a part in this law about the preservation of that official record. For a lot of our elections recently, when the election was over, the information just disappeared, and then that was it. Manual counting requirements for recounts and audits. Application, and it's just, this will apply to all ballots. A special rule for treatment of disputes when paper ballots have been shown to be compromised. So the ballots will be inspected, and if they've been compromised, studying and reporting. Durability and readability requirements for ballots. Durability requirements for paper ballots. Study and reporting. So it says if we're going to continue to have these machines, there's going to be a record. It's going to be transparent. It's going to be auditable so that we know exactly what happened. Then there will be an establishment and publication of procedures governing additional audits, prohibiting certification until the completion of those audits, and a deadline for the completion of those audits. So H.R. 1562, whoever your representative is, and mine's a Republican, and she's awful, Jamie Herrera Butler. She's apparently not supporting this, but I'm going to keep hammering on her. And I know other people will too, but I'm saying to you, if you're out there, first and foremost, get off of Facebook. Sorry, get off of Twitter. You're being lied to. You're being fooled. There are other ways to get your information. Social media is not a great way to get information. Second of all, quit voting for Republicans. They don't care if they have to lie, if they have to steal, if they have to misrepresent themselves. They don't really care what you want, and they're not going to do anything for you. Of course, you can also turn out. Make sure you turn out for this year's elections. Flip the House. Flip the Senate. The odds are against us. But if we win the 2018 election, then it is we who get to redraw the districts in 2020. Yes, after the elections this year, they're going to begin putting together their teams for who's going to redraw districts. And if the Democrats win back the House this year, they get to start putting that together right away. So we need the Democrats to win. Call your representative. House Resolution 1562, which is being spearheaded by Mark Pocan out of Wisconsin, where the show started today. Call your representative. This is going to be your House member, whoever your House member is. It's not to the Senate yet. It's only been introduced into the House. And it's got quite a few co-sponsors, but they're largely progressive. And so we need everybody, even Republicans. Oh, my representative's a Republican crap-tastic. I can't. No, call them. And call them every day and say that they need to support H.R. 1562 because everybody deserves the right to vote. And our elections can't be secret and they cannot be privatized. And I know it's a lot. It's a lot that I sprang on you today. It's a lot of stuff that I fit inside of an hour. But all of this stuff is mad important to me. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I want to thank everyone for listening. I want to thank everyone for your continued support. This does not have to be. We do not have to continue living this way. None of what's happening is normal. And I know this was a single issue show today, and I apologize about that, but I had to share all this stuff with you. I'll get at you next week. I try to end every show with what you can do, and I've given you several things that you can do. And so now, and I'm already working, I'll see you out there. But it's up to you now. It's up to you to make sure that you get out there. You start implementing some of these things. And you don't let the United States Republican Party tell you that you don't get to have a vote. And that you don't get to be a part of this. And if you're on the fringes, if you don't think the way that they think, it's your country too. Democracy's a messy thing. Messy. But you have to fight for it. And if we win the 2018 election, House and Senate, you don't get to just lay back. Okay, it's all good now. Got a house? got the Senate? Because the government's larger than that. Much larger than that. Even the White House isn't going to be enough. You got to get into your state houses. That includes your governor and your local representatives. You got to find out who all these people are, and you got to get on them. You can't let them act in your name when you have no idea what they're doing. Get on, ladies and gentlemen. It's on you now. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.pombi.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Pombi app at the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store for Android listeners. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search The Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I have woken you up, call your member of the House. Good morning.